Welcome to the Edinburgh Fringe. Sometimes a bed is just a bed. Sometimes it's a theatre show at the Fringe. Yes, good afternoon, good morning, good evening. The weekend awaits at the Edinburgh Fringe as the Arts Festival moves into day. Well, let's see, you start last Friday and we're moving into day 8. But if you count the previews and everything that started on Tuesday, we're into double figures already. Yep, and there's still 2 weeks to go. Welcome to the fun of the Fringe. Yes, it's Friday, the second weekend of the Fringe is looming. And while last week was all about getting established, this weekend is a chance for everyone to see just how much momentum they've picked up. This is particularly true for comedy, which places great stock on the weekend. But for every show at the Fringe, midweek is hard. So, you know, these late nights, well, people are going to work tomorrow most of the time, so you're not going to get huge houses, even though many of them are selling out, thanks to the huge numbers of tourists here. And of course, afternoon shows mean skipping out of the office if you're an Edinburgh resident or a local, which do make up a large majority, a large percentage. I'm not quite sure if it's a majority or not. I can't remember the numbers. But anyway, a big block of tickets does come from locals, and that's where the weekend comes in. As the big measuring stick, are people going to come out and see the show? So it's a nervous time, but the acts will stay the course. They're going to put on the best show possible every single day of the Fringe. And with 3,500 to choose from, there is going to be something for everybody. There's also going to be something for every single podcast as well. And today, that belongs to Bed, the musical. Centred around a titular piece of furniture, it examines a 20-year-long marriage through the presence of said bed that Alice and Ben bought instead of going on honeymoon. If beds could tell their own story, this bed has a tale to tell, and it's going to tell it through song. Written by Tim Anfogoth and Alan Whittaker, Bed is a musical about a place we spend a third of our life in, much more of our life around it, making it, and thinking up new things to do in it. Ahead of the show making its worldwide premiere at this year's Fringe, I spoke to Tim and director Matthew Gould about the devilish divan that can be found at the Gilded Balloon. Joining me now on the Edinburgh Fringe Show, the writer and the director from an intriguing new piece of theatre that's come up to the Fringe this year. It's called Bed. We have director Matthew Gould with us. Hello, Matthew.
Hi. Hi, Ewan.
And we have the writer, Tim Anfogoth.
Thank you, Ewan. Hi.
Tell me a little bit about Bed, Tim. Where did it start?
We started writing it back in 2018. Al Whittaker and myself, he's the composer, writes most of the music. I write most of the words. And we just had a project called Sound Domino on in London, which Matthew directed. That was a very different piece. It was a historical piece about the imprisonment of gay men by Mussolini. And it felt time to do something rather different. And Bed is a very intimate, small piece, two-hander, all set around, as you might guess, a bed.
Has it been specifically written for the Fringe? You say it's a two-hander there. Was it always aimed for a small cast Fringe theatre that way?
Yeah, we thought a festival, certainly. And the Fringe, we did bring a musical up back in 2013, again directed by Matthew, A Body to Die For, which had a sort of cult audience, small but perfectly formed, that really enjoyed it. And we learned a lot from doing that, and we're very fond of Edinburgh and the Fringe, and fantastic bars, brilliant place to be. That also was quite a large cast, and with all the fun and challenges that go with that. So quite excited to be working with a very tight project like this. But really enjoying because we managed to have we did three previews in Brighton Fringe, and rather nervous to start with, but delighted with the audience reaction we got.
Matthew, you're the director of this piece. Tell me a little bit how you got involved.
Well, I got involved really because I've worked a lot with Tim and Alan in the past, over the last 10 years on various productions, as Tim said. And the nice thing is with both Alan and Tim is that when they write individually and also when they write collectively, they often use me as a bit of a soundboard when it comes to how I think the project is developing. And for the various reasons that Tim just spoke about, being a much smaller cast, a subject that's a little bit sort of autobiographical for Tim, and then listening to some of the music that Alan was coming up with, I immediately got a sense that actually there was a lot of mileage with this production. And what really sort of piqued my interest with it is the fact that it's the first time that Tim and Alan have written a sung through piece. excuse me, all the other productions have been quite a traditional musical theatre piece where you have songs and you have an independent script, although all interlinked. Whereas this is more, it's sung through. It's 55 minutes of storytelling and emotion and a narrative, but all done through singing.
So, pardon my not knowing the theatrical terms, there's no acting bit. There's just, when I mean acting bit, I mean standing there reading lines. There's always music, there's always timbre going on, there's always patterns coming on, there's always melody coming through.
I mean, if you think more along the lines of purely from a musical point of view, it's more of an operatic style where there's no dialogue, there's no separate script. It's all just the narrative is held through song, and each of the songs links into the next stage of the storyline of the show.
Operatic sold me on that one there. Thank you. So, Tim, you said there that you were used as a sounding board with this piece and other pieces. At which point did you go, I want to direct this?
I would say the bottom line would be as soon as Tim and Alan write something, but actually believing that it has the possibility of being quite artistically successful. After we had done a couple of sort of iterations of the show, and we had gone backwards and forwards via online and some Zoom meetings and a couple of face-to-face meetings, and seeing that the way that the piece can be taken in certain directions, and the fact that Tim and Alan are very open to my input into the production as well, that would be the point where I go, actually, yes, this can be a very collaborative process, but also I can be allowed to put my own thoughts and feelings about the piece into a live performance.
Matthew, how often is it that you have such a close relationship with the director through the genesis of your writing?
I think with Tim and Alan, it's always been there because they've always been open to coming from a more sort of not as up until 2013, their experiences in musical theatre and professional theatre was quite limited. So they were always very open to me as being a person who's been in performing arts since the age of 23, 24. They always come, and they always know, they always bring ideas. And so it is a joy with them that I can be part of that process. With other producers, other writers, and also as a performer for many years, you don't always have that connection to the process of creating a new piece of theatre.
And Tim, on the other side of the page, how does it work when you have the director who's bringing in vision, who's much more focused on the staging, coming in early in the process?
No, it's really helpful, and it's fascinating too, because as a writer, one of the first things you learn about projects like this is that there's stuff that you've written that means things to people that you didn't realize necessarily it would mean, and other things that you think would mean something don't land in the way that you think that they were going to. And this, both the director and the actors as well, when you start working on the script, you start understanding that and being able to use that to make the whole project better.
What surprised you the most then in that creative process?
I think actually this time around, probably that most of it works pretty well first time, but that there were, you know, significant things that we could do to make it better. And I think particularly actually as a man, having a woman in the room working with some of the materials really interesting, and so on. So I think, you know, you bounce ideas around, lines obviously with this sung through approach as well, you haven't got very many lines that are purely conversational because they have to fit with music. So there is that quite creative tension around getting lines that really work, that are both sort of musically satisfactory and sound like a normal human being might actually produce them at some point. And that's a very interesting challenge too. But I think, it just comes to life in that process. And it's incredible as a writer as well to watch these poor actors doing the same scene 15 times until, you know, it feels like they've got it the way they want it. But it's, yes, and it's an incredible process, and it's a real privilege to be part of.
Hey, Matthew, in a normal theatre piece, an actor can bring a lot into a line reading. The obvious one is there, where do you put the emphasis in to be or not to be, to be, to be, not to be, and so on.
Yeah.
How does that work in a musical? Because you've got to get the beats in the music. So do you bring the cast in earlier in the process? Do I mean, how can they find their own line readings when music is has a different structure to it than a line?
Sure. I mean, with Drew and Maddie, who come from a, I would say, a more of an acting perspective, but who are both also very, very good singers, their first port of call would be to, for them on an individual basis and privately when they're learning the music and the libretto, they will look at it from an acting point of view. So the process ultimately isn't that different, but you maybe have a different, you come at it from a different angle where you understand what you're trying to say with the words, and then you see how the music then naturally fits with those words. And as Tim was saying, those are those moments where having Tim and Alan in the rehearsal room is very, very useful, because as a group, both Drew and Maddie, myself and James Cleave, who is our musical director and musical supervisor, are able to adapt and change within the rehearsal process, so that if there is anything that doesn't quite, it feels a bit clunky, doesn't quite flow, could be a little bit trite, we're able to in that process, just take it apart, and we can ask Alan to maybe rewrite the melody. We can get Tim to rewrite the words. And I think one of the joys of doing it both at Brighton and Edinburgh is that we're able to see how the piece works, see how it works long term, and then over that period, for whatever the next stage is for the production, we're able to tweak it or replace songs. We're able to sort of find out where the weak points are, where it doesn't quite scan for the actors. So we're able to bring in all those elements to then find out actually how we do marry up the libretto with the music and still keep it as a narrative, but without the script bits in between.
Was there anything that your actors, Drew and Madeline, brought to that process that neither of you had thought about?
From an acting point of view, I think through the process of you know, quite a bit of discussion and as much time as we have in the rehearsal process, we sort of all very quickly were on the same page. And knowing and having worked with Tim and Alan, they got to know Madeline and Drew very quickly. And also understood their take on life and relationships and bringing in their experiences from their own personal relationships. So it was invaluable having their point of view on whether a long-term relationship works, how you make a long-term relationship sustain the interest, sustain the joy, and cope with the bad bits as well. So, you know, sometimes the discussions could be quite in depth and quite emotional at times because people were being quite honest about their own relationships, even though we didn't know Drew or Maddie particularly well. You know, we'd only auditioned them for one day and then we immediately go into the rehearsal process. So having them bring in their personal stuff and their take on the actual written material was really important. Whether or not they influenced a lot of the production, I'm not really sure. It's an organic process, definitely. And occasionally they would voice that they didn't think some of the you know, words worked or didn't quite think some of the music flowed particularly well. You know, so you take all that on board and you either accept it, you incorporate it, or you dismiss it. So it's, you know, unfortunately, Tim, Alan, James, Drew and Maddie are all, and myself, are all very open to presenting things and getting rid of them as well.
Violence is very rare.
not very often.
So, Tim, you said they're written as a piece of fringe theatre. What happens in September to this piece?
Matthew's more of an expert on this than me, but I would say that we hope that if it continues to receive the sort of responses that it did in Brighton, which included laughter and tears and all the, you know, in the right places, I stress, that it does have a future, and we would like to take it to London, small London theatre, and do more with it. And we'd like to expand it because we think it's got, it's obviously fitted to an Edinburgh format of an hour, just under, and we think there's enough in the story and the emotional ups and downs and the music to make it extendable.
And given its music, when somebody comes out the show, is there a soundtrack?
I think there could be, but we haven't recorded one other than as a demo with the quality, etc. But I guess if anybody wanted, we could do all that at some point.
So perhaps the show itself, the show itself at the Fringe, Matthew, when can we catch it?
We're at the Gilded Balloon 2:15 every day, right through to the end.
And we will have a link, as always, to that back at our website, which is edinburghfringe.thepodcastcorner.com. So you straight into the ticket office so you can sort out your seats. There, Tim, Matthew, the show is bed, fascinating premise, and I've learned a new song through. I've learned a new phrase, so congratulations, and thanks for making it to Edinburgh.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
Bed, the musical there, and thanks to Matthew and Alan for... Bed, the musical there, and thanks to Matthew and Tim to take the time out of their preparations to speak to us here at the Fringe Podcast. Of course, they're now in the Gilded Balloon watching the show, directing the show, making sure everything is on track. It takes place at the Gilded Balloon 220 every day except Mondays, not just the 14th, they go dark on the 21st as well, but they are playing the 28th, so they are making that final Monday of the Fringe. As always, if you can like, love, share, subscribe, and review this podcast wherever you get your serialized audio from, be it Apple, Google, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Overcast, Undercast, Wumbling Free Cast, thank you very much. But the main thing is, I hope you're enjoying these samples, these little tasters of the Fringe. It's impossible to get all of these shows into one space. It's like a dark room, and you can only see one show at a time. And all the Fringe rooms are pretty much dark, and you can pretty much only see one show at a time. So yeah, this is just like the Fringe. Enjoy your weekend. I'm out to see what else I can find on the streets of Edinburgh, and I'll be back here Monday. Ta-ra for now. You've been listening to the Edinburgh Fringe Show, hosted by Ewan Spence, produced by The Podcast Corner. Listen to more from The Fringe at edinburghfringe.thepodcastcorner.com.